Let me just get clarity on the split of the time and rebuttal.
Your Honor, the idea is that Mr. Wassmer and I will split 6 minutes, and then if there is remaining time for rebuttal, then I will do the rebuttal.
All right, so 6 minutes each, and you with rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Please begin your argument.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. This is an appeal from a criminal case which conditional pleas were entered to the offense of possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine. The conditional pleas related to motions to suppress that raise, I'm going to mention three of the main issues. I don't know if I'll get to them all, but there is a Terry stop issue. There is an Arizona versus Gantt search incident to arrest issue, and there's a Florida versus Wells inventory issue. Regarding the Terry issue, Mr. Liva, my client, was a passenger in a vehicle driven by Ms. Campbell Martin, who's Mr. Wassmer's client. It pulled into a well-lit parking lot, turned out to be parking lot for the Lynn Marr High School in Marion, Iowa. There was a police officer in the lot because the school had decided not to allow kids and cars to congregate in the lot in the evening. It was 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. The officer observed the vehicle that was driven by Ms. Campbell Martin drive into the lot, had no prior involvement with the vehicle, no reports of any wrongdoing. The car just pulled in close to where the officer was. The officer at the suppression hearing said that she saw Campbell Martin make some kind of motion with her hand that the officer thought was an attempt to block her face, and responded by driving or parking the vehicle, the police vehicle, within a maybe 10, 15 feet of the vehicle that was driven by Campbell Martin, which had stopped at that point, and shining the police spotlight directly on the vehicle. The officer, her name was Officer Hotz, approached the vehicle started asking questions. Within about 55 seconds of the time she arrived at the vehicle, she made a statement, something's going on here, what's going on, run me through it. Followed by air quotes request for Mr. Liva to provide his identification. This eventually led to Mr. Liva's arrest for providing false information.
Counsel, if you would, the time is passing quickly. Would you focus on specifically what your argument is for legal error for the relief you seek?
The argument is that shining that the officer's conduct constituted a stop without reasonable suspicion, and therefore the fruits of the entire stop must be suppressed, including the subsequent stop, search of a backpack that was in near Mr. Liva in the passenger seat of the car. The search
what's the authority that you cite for the conduct of the officer to approach the car when she's been approaching other cars in the lot to ask them to leave? What about that conduct is improper?
She didn't just approach the car and tell them to leave, which I agree would have been entirely appropriate. Instead, she, from close range, shined a high-powered spotlight directly into the face or into the vehicle. Another case noted that these lights are designed to illuminate the stopped car as well as provide protection for the officer by blinding and disorienting the car's occupants if they look at the squad car. Given that a reasonable person placed in a spotlight would feel unfree to leave, the use of such light is suggestive of a stop.
Was there any evidence that light was used on other cars as well, or other people in the parking lot?
There was, in the video, there was, one of the videos was a different officer came, noticed another vehicle in the lot, followed it, and just pulled up and asked the occupants to leave. So not in that instance, and there's nothing in the record to indicate that the spotlight was used on any other vehicle.
What do you do with United States versus Mayberry? It's a 2012 case in which we said that shining a spotlight into a vehicle is not necessarily a seizure.
Well, Mayberry can be distinguished on a couple of grounds, Your Honor. One is that Mayberry wasn't stopped. He ran off. So that was indicative that there was no stop. But factually, we can't tell from reading the opinion exactly, but the police car was on the street. The car that Mabry was in a parking lot some distance away. We don't know how far, but in this case, Leiter's case, it was very close. On page 10, there's a photograph of how close the police car was to the vehicle. So that's how I think we can distinguish Mabry. As far as the Arizona versus...
If there had not been the shining of the light, would you still say there was a stop by the officer approaching the vehicle to have a conversation?
There's another factor, Your Honor, which was that the officer... tone of voice, I think, is relevant, and you can see that from watching the video. It was very assertive. And she also said, something's going on here. Run me through it. What's going on? So she was making accusations as well. So she didn't, so those, I think that all three of those factors put together indicate a stop that. And more, when she indicated that that the vehicle wasn't, if it had left, she would have stopped it. So,
Mr. Mayor,
would have felt detained, and in actuality, they were detained. So,
I think you're going to need to yield your time to Mr. Trimble to give him an opportunity.
Yeah, Mr. Wassmer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Wassmer. Mr. Trimble's for the appellee. Mr. Wassmer?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address the inventory issue here. The officers in this case did not comply with the Marion Police Department's impound and inventory policy. That policy lists six circumstances under which the police may impound and inventory a vehicle. An impound, of course, occurs when there's a valid reason to seize the vehicle. The inventory occurs to make sure that any personal property in the vehicle is properly accounted for. The reason that the government and the police proffered here is that the vehicle can be impounded and inventoried when the owner or other person in possession of the vehicle is arrested. However, in order to be reasonable and pass constitutional muster, that provision must be interpreted to apply only when there is no other owner or other person in possession of the vehicle present to take custody of the vehicle who would be authorized to remove the vehicle from the scene.
Mr. Wassmer, is incident to arrest the only basis for impound on the facts that we have here? When under the guidelines, it seems that when the officer is unable to determine if the vehicle is properly registered and there's some question about possession, that seems to be a more applicable provision under the tow policy for what happened on the facts we have.
Well, the police and the government here primarily argued about when the owner or other person in possession of a vehicle was arrested. With regard to the provision that you just referenced, Your Honor, there wasn't really a dispute as to whether or not the vehicle was properly registered. It was properly registered. The question, I suppose, is whether or not there was sufficient evidence that the vehicle had been validly loaned to Mr. Harris, but there was nothing to counter that assertion that it had been loaned to Mr. Harris and that Mr. Harris had then consented to Ms. Campbell-Martin driving the vehicle. So I don't think that exception applies, and also that was not particularly the reason that was proffered by the police as the reason for the impound and the inventory.
Mr. Osberg, if this search was proper under Gantt as a search incident to arrest, would we even need to reach the inventory question?
No, the search can be proper under either the inventory exception or under the Gantt incident to arrest. I think either one's an independent reason for justifying the search. So from our standpoint, we would have to win on both issues in order for the court to find the search invalid.
Why is it improper under Gantt?
Basically it's because the crimes that Mr. Levia and Ms. Campbell-Martin were arrested for were providing false identification, and then Ms. Campbell for not having a valid driver's license. At the time they were arrested, the police had all the information they needed with respect to that. They had the identification of each. They had Ms. Campbell-Martin's driver's license, which had already been provided by Mr. Harris from a purse that was in the back seat. There wasn't any likelihood that there was any other evidence in the car that would have been relevant to those offenses that they were arrested for. So basically what this then turns into is a search by the police for evidence of additional crimes based on a hunch that they might be involved in some illegal activity such as drug trafficking.
Well, I know we don't look at this like in hindsight, but didn't they actually find more identification information in the backpack and in the center console?
Not with respect to Ms. Campbell-Martin, at least. And I don't recall if they did with respect to Mr. Levia or not. I think there was some papers with their names on them, but that wouldn't be relevant to the offenses that they were arrested for.
I'm just wondering what the logical extension of this argument is. So suppose that they found meth, and I'm changing the facts. Suppose they found meth in open view, and there was a backpack sitting in the back seat. It seems to me like the officers would then be able to, even though they have a good meth charge against the occupants of the vehicle, they could still reach back into the backpack, supposing there's a backpack, and see if there's more meth in the backpack. Isn't the same thing true here?
Well, under what the scenario that you've described, Your Honor, the police there now have at least probable cause to believe that they are involved in drug trafficking. Okay, and they may have already arrested them for possession of the meth that was in plain view. In that case, I think they are justified in searching for additional evidence of drug trafficking, such as scales, packaging materials, drug ledgers, anything like that. But here, you have to look at what they were arrested for. And when it's in a search incident to arrest, and we're looking at the part of that test that has to do with evidence of the crime of arrest, there isn't any likelihood of additional evidence that would support that crime of arrest. The police already have everything that is available and needed to charge them with what they've been arrested for. Whereas in the scenario the court describes, there could be additional evidence.
Is that really the test, that they have enough evidence to support the charge? Or is the test that there might be further evidence that would help be relevant to the charge?
Well, the test is there might be further evidence, but once they've already found Ms. Campbell-Martin's identification, her actual driver's license, there isn't going to be any further evidence that's needed or likely to be found that identifies her. It just simply isn't there. I see my time is up, so unless the court has any further questions, I would conclude my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Wassmer. Mr. Tremel?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, Mark Tremel, Assistant U.S. Attorney in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. First of all, with regard to the consensual encounter, for the reasons outlined in our brief, this was not a stop. It was a parked car. The officers were not positioned to limit the movement of the car. There was one officer there until Sergeant Holland arrives about 13 minutes later, and there's no language indicating compliance was necessary. So for those and the other reasons outlined in our brief, this was a consensual encounter, and the court doesn't need to reach the reasonable suspicion argument. However, in the event the court reaches the reasonable suspicion argument and looks at this at some point as a Terry stop, we would note that sometimes on the videotape from Officer Holtz, her observations regarding reasonable suspicion for OWI, nervousness, fidgeting, speech quick, pupils constricted, and heavy breathing, that was between 0 and 30 seconds of the videotape.
Counsel, couldn't the constricted pupils have been a result of the spotlight and not some nervousness or evidence of possible misconduct?
Your Honor, there certainly could be, and I don't recall at which point specifically the officer saw the constricted pupils. Certainly there could be an explanation for that, but then in combination with all the other factors and the observations that the officer made, we believe all that together. Those observations she made were in the first 30 seconds, and then later on there were some comments on the video about how she observed that she was tweaking. The no DL, I don't have my ID, that was at about 40 to 43 seconds. There was reasonable suspicion there that she was driving without a license. The false information to the officers, Ms. Campbell-Martin gave that at about 3 minutes and 9 seconds, and Mr. Liva at about 3 minutes and 46 seconds. And the false information included false names. They'd already indicated they didn't have IDs. They didn't know their last four of their social security numbers, and he stumbled over his date of birth. So all that gave reasonable suspicion for that offense. Reasonable suspicion potentially for a stolen vehicle, that would have been at about 8 minutes and 25 seconds in the video. But earlier on in the video were reasonable suspicion for other things. Regarding the inventory issue, we believe that the inventory is the policy authorized on both grounds under A6 and A4. We would note that under A6, the magistrate court found that that applied. The district court did not. We believe the district court erred in relying on the red language. The impoundment policy that was provided to the court was provided after an Iowa Supreme Court decision. Then it was altered, and there was some red language that was added in number 6. That language was not in effect at the time of this stop, and so number 6 read, when the owner or other person in possession of the vehicle is arrested, and that happened here. Ms. Campbell-Martin was in possession of the vehicle. She was arrested. Now, the defense argues that the officer should have let Mr. Harris drive the vehicle away. This was not required by the policy that they'd let him drive it away, but keep in mind that Mr. Harris had an ID. He didn't have a driver's license. He claimed that the car belonged to a friend named April Johnson or April Johnston. Later said it was Kristen Jefferson. And then he borrowed the car from a co-signer's cousin is what he said. So given all that, there's a real question about Mr. Harris's connection to the vehicle. That's A6. Under A4, as the court points out, it's also allowed under the policy when the officer is unable to determine if the vehicle is properly registered, and the properly is the question here, and there is some question as to who should have possession of the vehicle. And again, it's a similar argument. The district court ruled it was unclear if it was properly registered. Kristen Jefferson was the name they determined it was registered to. Harris, Mr. Harris said it was April Johnston, and there was some confusion about that. And so the officers did, you know, there was some question as to who should have possession of the vehicle. Either of those would qualify under the inventory policy. And then in terms of standardized procedure, the sergeant acknowledged that after the methamphetamine was found, that he should have stopped the inventory after he found the methamphetamine. At that point, however, there was clearly probable cause. There would have been exigent circumstances and probable cause at a search. And the fact that he did continue the search after he found the meth doesn't turn this into a pretextual issue. With regard to the question on the search incident to arrest, this false information is different from the offense of driving under suspension. Excuse me. Driving under suspension, the government has to prove that a person is driving and that the license is suspended. And proving a false statement can be more complicated than a yes or no of whether a license is suspended. And further evidence can help prove that case, prove whether the name is false, prove whether the date of birth is false, prove whether other information is false. Here, the district court correctly determined that officers need not desist when they possess some evidence of an offense. They may continue to search until they've uncovered all the evidence that's within their lawful authority to obtain, and we believe that was a correct ruling. I'd be happy to answer any questions the court has.
Mr. Tremor, I looked at the video yesterday, and I have two concerns. One, with respect to the search incident to arrest, the way they were going through things, it didn't look to me, you know, they were rummaging through various items in the back seat, which was full of various stuff. It just didn't have the sense that they were actually looking for identification type things, and that they had a sense that something was going on here, and they even made comments along that line. And then secondly, with respect to an inventory, it didn't look really like an inventory either. You know, at least normally in my experience, you do the impound, you bring the thing back, and one officer's got to take notes of the various items in the car, and the other officer's calling out what the items are. It didn't look like that either. So help me out a little bit.
Your Honor, regarding what they were looking for, they can have an investigatory interest as well as do an inventory. And in terms of in doing the inventory, what were they looking for, or what was their order in terms of looking? You know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't recall specifically which items they were looking at first and what the method was that they were going through that. I think it would be able to be upheld.
It didn't look like an inventory where somebody's saying, okay, there's a can of Coke and there's a pair of sunglasses and there's, you know, the various items. They're just searching.
I think there was some testimony, and I don't recall precisely where this was at, was that they would, at the station, that they would write specific things down, but I'm not sure I don't recall how that would have been cataloged. So yeah, I don't recall anything on the video that Your Honor described, but I think the search can be upheld as a valid inventory and as a search incident to arrest, even if we don't know precisely by looking at the video what item, why they are looking at a certain part of the back seat or the front seat before going on to another part. But beyond that, I don't recall any detail on that, Your Honor.
I don't see any additional questions. Thank you, Mr. Tremel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Meyer, rebuttal?
Regarding the Arizona versus Gant issue, there's really no difference between, no practical difference, we would assert, between driving under suspension, which is what Ms. Campbell-Martin was doing, which Mr. Gant was doing, and providing false information. They're both status. You know, you're not the person who you say you are. You don't have a license. That's a status. You're not accused of a crime that involves doing something or having something, which would then justify looking in a vehicle for additional evidence. So there's no practical difference between what Gant was stopped for and what Ms. Campbell Martin and Mr. Oliver were stopped for and arrested for. And that's why Arizona versus Gant applies. And with respect to the inventory, I certainly agree that looking at that video, the officers had an investigatory intent. I mean, one of the officers, the second one, said that they're up to no bleeping good. And it was almost a relish with the way that the search was conducted, which is fine, but it's just indicative of the intent. And the officer went straight to the backpack. That was the first place he went to look. Moreover, that same officer didn't stop after he looked in the backpack in violation of the inventory policy. Which is also indicative of the purpose for the search, not being just to catalog the items. And finally, I don't have a finally, I guess. I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Thank you, Mr. Wassmer. Mr. Trimble, court appreciates all counsel's participation in the argument this morning and providing us help in resolving the issues appealed. Thank you very much. Counsel may be excused.